You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. I also want to thank you for making this podcast the number one Boston Celtics podcast around, number one Boston Celtics podcast on the iTunes rankings. And that's all thanks to you guys. Appreciate the love and the support. We are your free daily Boston Celtics podcast. I am John Corrales. I cover this team for MassLive.com. I am joined today by a legend. You know him on Twitter, the twitter.com as Snotty Drippin, even though he is a purveyor of horrible Halloween candy. Welcome James Holis to the show. James. Yes. I didn't know that was coming, and I appreciate that. I needed somebody to give me that shout. The I love it. I'm so flustered by it. I didn't know that was coming. That was awesome. And it really steered me away from calling you out on your candy corn thing.
Hey, look, man,
it's trash.
I have elite taste. I like the finest wines, you know, the choice is best beef and also the best candy. So candy corn obviously is Halloween. It's delicious.
It's not, it's soap.
Hey, you know what? Trash is a snotism, right? Trash is terrific, radical, awesome, sugary, heaven. So you're right. It's trash.
This is where battle lines are drawn. More than anything else in America, beyond like Republican, Democrat, Trump, left, it's candy corn or no candy corn. Like there's just no, there's no like, it's okay. It's trash or you love it. I'm on team trash.
I'm team candy corn. I'm gonna grab a couple handfuls and I'll just, you know, I'll delight in it. So
I want to report anybody that hands out candy corn at Halloween to the police. I think it's just horrible.
Call me Officer James then, because I'll go
confiscate.
I'll go pick it up.
Yeah,
I'll confiscate it.
All right. Well, weigh in on this hot debate. We're coming out hot on Locked On Celtics. Pro candy corn, anti candy corn. Let's fight it out on Twitter. Since you're here, this is the first time we've talked since basketball has returned. We'll get your thoughts on the preseason. Later on, we'll talk about Jaylen Brown, the contract details starting to come out, thanks to Chris Haynes and Yahoo Sports. We'll talk about that in the second segment. Later on in the third segment, just a little statistical thing that I wrote. I thought it was interesting how the Celtics are eliminating the mid-range from their game. That's going to be the third segment. But okay, so James, let's do this. What's your take? Preseason is over. We've seen everything. Are you ready to crown Carson Edwards Rookie of the Year?
I mean, you might as well say he's an MVP running, because that kid is, yeah, he's awesome, man. You know what? It's funny, and it sounds like I'm going to overstate it a little bit, but, you know, last season was kind of traumatic as a fan. You know, it wasn't a lot of fun. For long periods of the season, it was a slog. It wasn't fun, and then the off season was not fun at all. Even if we kind of saw some of it coming, but preseason was nice because we saw a lot of blowouts. We got to see, I think Jaylen has shown us some improvements, and he looks bigger and stronger, and he's actually driving and looking to dish instead of just driving headlong. And the young guys, the rookies, are fun, and they're all really good so far. So I hashtag it. It's only preseason, but, you know, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But when Carson Edwards hits, what, 7-8 threes in a quarter, like, the guy can shoot.
8.
Flat out.
Yeah.
You know?
That was a hell of a performance. And you saw, like, I was just looking at it again, and he worked hard to get open. Like, he wasn't just like, just leave him alone and, oh, wow, he's hitting a few, and then he just gets hot. Like, I've seen guys get left alone and then get hot, and then it's oh shit. But he was kind of contested throughout all of those, and he worked on a couple of those. I mean, side to side, I mean, he went from both sides of the floor, probably got four different picks, got the ball, spun, squared up in an instant, and splashed it. I mean, the kid's got stamina. He is willing to do whatever it takes to get open, and he's got the mechanics. I mean, the mechanics are down. Like, and it's hard when you're running side to side. There's a tendency to fade one way or the other. You know, it's hard to stop on a dime and go straight up. But this kid, whatever he's going to be this season, he's at least got that shoot. The shooting mechanics are just down. Stops on a dime, straight up and down, squares his shoulders to the basket. No matter what, he's square, and he's giving himself a chance to make these shots. It's very impressive.
Yeah, he's locked and loaded, and, like, it's instantaneous. Really super quick release. On balance, like you said, and there's a couple of them. I think, like, he comes off the screen and he's shooting as he's turning, but the shot is still on balance and it's pure. You know, it's not pure. It's not like a pure shooter, but it's I think so. I heard somebody make the comparison to Eddie House, and it fits, right? Just a quick as a wish, shots up, and even though he's undersized, like he's like a few feet behind the line. He's not towing the line. He doesn't have to just be like a straight catch and shoot guy. He's coming and curling and. It was really impressive. And then, hey, our guy Waters, Tremont Waters, was almost as impressive last night, too. Those guys can really, really play. And I tweeted about how they outplayed the quote-unquote future of the Cavs backcourt, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Two lotto pick. And it's preseason. I'm just joking because I know that Sexton and Garland are going to be really good, too. But, I mean, it's factual. They outplayed them last night, and they like, pretty handily. So it was impressive.
So here's the you're right. It's preseason. You don't want to go too crazy because everybody gets outplayed. And people get outplayed. You can't just take one game and extrapolate that out. Like, that's irresponsible. At the same time, from a Cleveland perspective, I'm a little upset that there was no punchback from those guys. Like, you're the future of the Cavs, and these guys, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like bad, but it's 2 second-round picks. You know what I mean? So, like, you're a two-way guy and a second-round pick, and you're getting burnt. At some point, where's the pride? Where's that thing inside of you that's like, oh, no. I am not going to let this happen. You know, that's something that I would have liked to have seen from a Cleveland perspective. And it didn't happen. Again, I don't want to overstate it, but it was still. I would, if I'm a Cavs fan, I'd be like, that's not a great sign for the future. Tremont Waters, that kid is so smooth. That kid just knows how to play basketball. He is like, his instincts are great. If he was 6'5", he's a lottery pick and. He's the future of somebody's franchise. That kid can play basketball.
Absolutely. I mean, really impressive by both those guys. I guess, but they, and I don't watch college ball. Were they both 4-year guys or what? How'd that work?
Tremont was a junior, I believe.
Okay. So he spent 3 years in college. And you know what? This is, sometimes it helps, right? He wasn't ready as a freshman. So yeah, he needed his 3 years and it shows. He's really polished, man. So. Like I said, last season was a chore at times, and it didn't feel good after all the expectation for them to fall on their face the way they did. But the Celtics now should be fun again this year. So,
yeah, I think the things that we've seen this preseason, I mean, you tick off the points. How does Gordon Hayward look? I thought he looked good. He didn't dominate, so I don't know. Maybe he was just holding back. I don't know. But he looked good, and people are raving about him in practice. Jason Tatum, he looks good. I like his change in shot profile. Jaylen Brown looks really good. I think Tatum and Brown really benefited from Team USA. Kemba, same thing. He's been kind of like low key, not any big storylines from him, but you hear like Marcus Smart saying on the Athletic podcast and around different people, he's saying that Kemba's like almost like it feels like he's been here for a year already. And so it's not the concerns about the chemistry, the concerns about how pieces are going to fit. I think those I feel good about how this team fits. I feel good about steps forward for Tatum and Hayward and Brown. It's only a matter of how big a step forward are they going to take? How big a step forward is this team going to take in their kind of like addition by subtraction, like everybody loves each other, kumbaya, versus people don't like each other and the locker room's a mess, Kyrie era Celtics, at least at the end of last year. So
My big concern is, I guess, the pessimist in me, and I'm trying to be a realist about it because I feel the same, right? I don't think Kem is better than Kyrie, and I really appreciated when Kyrie came out and owned up to his missteps last season. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing for me, but at the same time, like you know it and I know it, losing Al Horford is huge, like huge. So
that's a bigger deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Him and Baines, right? Those guys are the backbone of the defense, basically. So this is going to be a real test of Brad Stevens' coaching acumen. But like you said, a guy like Kemba and everyone else, I think it was a humbling experience last year. So we're going to see if they can bring the right mindset every night like they didn't last year, right? So it's good. I like it. I'm looking forward to this season.
Yeah, I think my one takeaway from the preseason, Brad Stevens, I feel like he is, and he won't say it, so I can't say that he said this. It's just a feeling that I get, that he's come out of this last season feeling like, you know what, I messed up. And I think that he allowed... And in the team, not just him, Danny mm-hmm. Ainge, allowed Kyrie to just kind of do almost anything he wanted because he's a star player. And when you've got a guy that's capable of doing what Kyrie does, you just kind of, the rules don't apply to him, right? Like you get LeBron, you got KD, you've got like the guys that can just go out there and drop 30 on a moment's notice. Those guys, if they say, you know what, I don't feel like practicing today, what are you going to do? You're going to suspend the guy? Like teams kind of cater to those guys. And the Celtics catered a bit to Kyrie. And I think that kind of was part of, at least in Brad Stevens' mind, again, this is my feeling, that was part of the problem. This
you
year.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'll say this. He kind of did admit it because he said, I think last year, let me see if I get the wording right. He said last year really kind of like cemented how he thinks the game should be played. Meaning he knows they got away from quote unquote Celtics basketball. He knows that it was Kyrie and then everyone else and they allowed it. And so that's why I inferred from his statement when he said that. He said like, you know, last year really.
That was the media day quote right here. Exactly. This is it. And this yep. is stuck out for me too. I have the transcription right here. I just think all that I've always thought and believed about the game has just been reinforced.
There you go.
That's so the quote. And you hit on it. I hit on it. I'm right there with you.
Yep. So that's you know, hey, they try to kowtow. And, you know, I think with some superstars, you can do that because that superstar realizes the responsibility that he still has. You know, to be a leader. And hey, Kyrie said it. He didn't do a good job last year. So he abused that responsibility and it all cascaded down. So it's not just Kyrie. It's not just Stevens. It's not just Ainge, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of things. We saw that. So yes, I agree with you. He didn't come out and say, I did. Oh, no, I think he did. No, he said, hey, I did a bad job last year. There's a quote. I saw one right. interview. He said, I didn't do a good job last year. So, yeah, they're all turning the page. And this is we'll see a team that's going to – Brad's going to be Brad, and the guys are going to react the right way because they had a taste of the embarrassment of all the expectations blown up in their face. So I think they're going to – yeah, this will be a good season.
So we'll see how it all comes together. One thing that I think could possibly derail things is it's Jaylen Brown and his contract situation because anybody that's in a contract year, they have a tendency – to kind of be worried about that. And if he has a bad game, whatever, we know how that goes. So when we come back, we'll talk about Jaylen Brown's contract. there were some details about what the Celtics are offering, and we'll kind of discuss what we think Jaylen Brown should get. We'll do that right after this break. And remember, Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
New report out of Yahoo, Chris Haynes dropping some details from a bunch of extension-eligible guys around the league. One of those guys, Jaylen Brown. And according to Haynes, the Boston Celtics have offered Jaylen Brown a four-year, $80 million contract extension. That is obviously an average annual value of about $20 million a year. The first year, assuming that it escalates at 8% the way it's supposed to, the first year of that contract is actually somewhere around $18 million. So Danny Ainge trying to get Jaylen Brown at, I think 4 years, $80 million is a reasonable price. What do you think? Do you think, James, that that's reasonable, team-friendly, or what?
All right, so I'm like a Jaylen Brown stan almost. I really love the kid. I love his mindset, demeanor, skill set. I think it's a little team friendly, right? Because look at the money that what's the guy's name? Jamal Murray got.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
He got the 5-170.
That's a lot of money for Jamal Murray. Just hearing it out loud, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. That's a contract, right? That pays him, I think the last year of that contract pays him over $30 million.
Right, because we're talking 5-170. It's over, you know, it averages out to over 30 a year. So that's a lot of money. So, yeah, that would be a team-friendly contract, right? Jaylen Brown hasn't shown that Jamal Murray's produced. He's shown, and he's that – I'm not saying – I don't know if he's earned that money, but whatever. Yeah, so Jaylen Brown hasn't shown that level of production, but – the potential is there. So I think that would be a team-friendly contract. And, we know that Danny Ainge and the Celtics don't normally do rookie extensions, right? I think the last one that got one was Rondo, if I remember correctly.
Yep, that's correct.
Back in 2009. Yeah, so this is like they're gonna float him an offer. They float him an offer, and he's going to turn it down, right? He's going to just let that sit there, and he's betting on himself this season. And he looks physically bigger. If he can, I listen to you all the time, and great show. And you all talk about, you know, he needs to show you different things, and I think he's doing it right now. And it's very small sample size, but if he can keep being a playmaker, keep being a consistent defender, he was hitting the three-pointer last season, but keep hitting the three, and really develop into a versatile all-around kind of guy that they can really depend on, then, you know, I have this sneaky suspicion Jaylen Brown might not be a Celtic next year. Because with Gordon Hayward getting paid, Kemba getting paid, Jason Tatum's coming up. If a team floats him a max next year, I mean, I don't know, man. It would break my heart, but I hope he stays. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think that like Jaylen Brown's preseason has certainly given him a little bit of an edge. Because I think he's shown that he's added things to his game. And like I said before, Team USA has given him, I think, a little bit of a head start. I like what I've seen from him. He's driving better. He's finishing much more creatively than he has in the past. My biggest argument against Brown is that he was always just driving and trying to dunk in a straight line on everybody. Now he's starting with his left and he's crossing over and he's kind of finishing on the other side of the rim. That's really great. So we'll see what all of this is worth. Now, you have to look at these contracts in context. So 4 years, $80 million starts Jaylen Brown at about $18 million a year next year. And then it goes up to 19 and change, then almost 21, then over 22. So that's the 4-year deal. So next year, if he made, let's just say 18. $18 million is less than Julius Randle. It's less than Clint Capella. It's right about what Ricky Rubio is making. So if I'm an agent, that's Eric Bledsoe money. If I'm his agent, I start rattling off those names to Danny Ainge. And I say, Jalen's not in that class. Jalen's better than that. Now, Jamal Murray's contract starts next year at $29 million. And then pays him, then pays him 31, then 33 and a half, and then almost 36. Now, the point I've been making on this podcast is Jaylen Brown at rounded up $30 million a year. And next season, if Gordon Hayward opts in, then that's $34 million for him, $34 million for Kemba. Jason Tatum in another year will be making 30 mil. Like, does Jaylen Brown getting that kind of money, is that going to be the guy that is one of your big three that leads you to a title? Because that's what you pay $30 million a year for. You're paying for a star. You're paying for a big three type of guy. And I don't know. Like, I've been saying all along that I don't think Jaylen Brown can be that, but his preseason's kind of opened that door a little bit for me to be wrong about it. And so, well, maybe he can be that. I still think he needs to become a better passer. Like, he needs to create for other people a little bit more than he does. And while still doing the stuff he's doing to score, like, that's what makes him a big three type of, like, raising the games of other people. Like, it's one thing to be a good scorer, but you got to make other people better if you're going to be one of those big three type of guys. So that's my big question with Jaylen Brown. And I don't know that he's going to get to that level. I don't know if another team is going to pay that level. Is Atlanta going to come through with a big offer like that to make him the centerpiece and bring him home? He's from Atlanta. Like, is that going to be something that the Celtics are facing as a threat? Because you also have to take into account the market next year. It's a weak free agent class. People might be saving their money for 2 years from now when Giannis and other big names become free agents. Like, it's really tough to kind of gauge exactly what Jaylen Brown's going to get.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. That, like, what teams really have the space? Atlanta. I've heard someone say Atlanta. Someone was saying to me that Dallas would be a good home for him, right? Like, Dallas would be a perfect fit. I don't know about that. Orlando. Like, you know, there's always the bottom feeder teams that might just say, screw it. Let's see. We got cap space. Right now we're at the ground floor of whatever we're doing. Let's float it out there. So, I mean, all it takes is one, right?
Sure,
all it takes is one.
Of course. Like,
and yeah, then, so look at Al Horford. We thought we had Al Horford kind of, you know.
It's true. All right, absolutely true.
3 years and, you know, 25, he'll probably stay. And all of a sudden, he went dark. He went silent. He turned his back on the franchise, and boom, he popped up with his money. He got his money from somewhere else. So it would hurt. I really am a fan of Jaylen Brown's game and his demeanor and his, you know, his mindset. And he's taken every lump that came his way so far, played every role they've asked him to play.
Yep.
You can tell when he's not happy about it. But, you know, I think this season he has the right mindset. So it would suck if we drafted him so high and we see him. I don't think he'd walk, right? They'd probably try to do a sign and trade or something. But yeah,
I think they might try to do that. The problem with sign and trades is, you know, now you're putting yourself the hard cap, and you don't know what's going to happen in 2021. Again, you have the potential for Hayward to opt in. Who knows what that is? But then you've got other people. You got, you know, Tice is non-guaranteed. Maybe they pick him up if he plays well and kind of stopgap another year at center. But they've got other things that they need to kind of figure out after that. So I don't know if they want to go down the hard cap route.
Let me ask you this. If he does get a max from somewhere else and ends up moving on, do you look at their hesitance to move him for a Kawhi Leonard, a Jimmy Butler, or a Paul George? Does it, like, change it, your opinion on their non-moves at all then?
No, because I understood, like, in those moments, I know that the Twitter jokes are like, oh, he wouldn't trade Jaylen Brown for Kawhi because, you know, Jaylen was supposed to be the next Kawhi. Like, Jaylen could be, like, I've said, like, Jalen as Kawhi Light certainly was one of the career paths that he could take. I hate saying it like that, though, because you just it becomes a Kawhi comparison, and that's not fair to anybody.
Right. Yeah, but such a, and it's such a rare, like, a, such a small chance of a player blooming the way that Kawhi did. So, yeah.
Right. But the Kawhi thing, what Toronto was in a unique position. They were, I think they were on the verge of blowing it up and taking the chance on Kawhi and having happen exactly what happened. 1 year, you trade away pieces and you get that 1 year out of him and he's gone. Well, you get that championship. Okay, great. Like Boston, obviously, yes, you want that championship. There's no guarantee it would have been the same thing in Boston. Like, just because he won a championship with Toronto doesn't mean Kawhi was going to win a championship wherever he went. And,
right.
And secondly, Boston didn't have that same type of, like, risk that they wanted to take with Kawhi. Like,
right.
That possibility of Kawhi walking after a year is the same reason why they didn't trade Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis. Like, you just can't give up an asset like that for a 1 year rental and just hope that you can cash out. Like, in retrospect, the championship makes it look worse, but in the moment, I understood it. And the Paul George thing, that was on Indy because the Celtics needed to sign Gordon Hayward first.
Right. Oh, that's right. Right.
You know,
right.
If people forget that and they say, oh, you wouldn't trade him for Paul George. Like, I think they wanted to trade him for Paul George, but Indy decided to make the move with OKC because they liked that deal better. They didn't want to trade Paul George to an Eastern Conference rival. They got him out into the West, and they liked the return. Oladipo's a great return, it turns out. Like, that was something that people knocked them for, but that turned out to be a great return. And for the Celtics, they needed to sign Gordon Hayward because if they traded for Paul George, they couldn't have signed Gordon Hayward. Like, Ainge's goal was sign Gordon, make this trade. Now you bring Gordon and Paul George, and he told them to wait, and they didn't want to wait, which is their right. That's what they, you know, but that's why those things didn't work out. So,
right.
I get why people make their jokes, and it's Twitter. People got to get their jokes off. So, but
yeah, I'll say Celtics Twitter was a little bit insufferable last summer. Yeah, you know, hey, we were full of ourselves, and you know, even I tried to like hold it down some, but I was like, oh yeah, man, finals is ours, is, you know, finals here we come. So yeah, I mean, we're taking our licks now. It happens, but yeah, imagine a healthy Gordon Hayward and Paul George and Kyrie, man.
Oh, that, I mean, right? That would have been something. Okay, so we'll see what Jaylen Brown's contract situation works out to be. I don't expect a contract to be agreed to unless the Celtics come up with something much closer to what they find palatable. But even, you know, you go 4 years, $105 million, that's 80% of the max that Brown is eligible for. That seems like a decent number, but I don't think that Brown is going – like that offer will probably be there as a restricted free agent. Brown wants to see if he can get all 170, so I would expect him to play this season out and go for that full 170, which, hey, go for it, man. Like, if you trust that you can get there and you're not worried about the injury, then go for it and see what happens. And if you don't get to 170, then I'm sure, like, somewhere between 80 and 100 million is going to be waiting there from somebody. So that's the Jaylen Brown contract. Up next, we're going to talk about the Celtics changing their approach offensively and eliminating the mid-range shot. We're going to do that. First, I want to remind everybody that the Locked On NBA preview week is going on right now. If you missed the Wednesday show was the Atlantic Division preview. I did the Celtics, and then I was back with Dave Vermille to preview the entire division. It's about an hour-long podcast, all the local experts on their teams. The rest of the Eastern Conference going to go through Thursday and Friday. So subscribe to Locked On NBA to get that show. Stretching back to Friday, six divisions, 6 days. Check that out. We're back with more Locked On Celtics right after the break.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
In the break, we're having a little chat, and you posed an interesting question, so why don't you go ahead and ask that while I think about what my answer is going to be.
Yeah, see, I wanted to kind of spring it on you on air, but I'm glad I gave you a little time to mull it over a little bit. Just, I want to hear your gut reaction. This, no, it's October 2020, right before the season starts. Is Jaylen Brown in Kelly Green, or is he on another team?
My feeling has been all along that the Celtics are going to make an in-season trade. So I'm going to still say at this point, I'm going to say no, he's not on the team. And the Celtics, one scenario that I've been wondering about with Jaylen is, what if he plays so well that the Celtics feel like they can get a big return for him in a trade and kind of fix the makeup of their team, the balance of their team? And that goes back to my initial question of, can Jaylen Brown be one of your big three to win a championship? And if he's playing well, but the answer in Danny Ainge's mind is, hey, that's great, but I still don't think he can be one of those big three. If he thinks a team wants to max him out, then you go to whichever team, you know, whether it's Atlanta or Orlando or Dallas or whomever, and you say, if you want to sign Jaylen Brown, if you want to make him a cornerstone guy, you can offer him 4 years in a free agent signing this summer. But if you trade for him now, you can offer him the fifth year, and that increases your ability to hold on to him. Like, that's one of the things. Like, you can't do a sign and trade anymore to add a fifth year, but you can trade for a guy mid season, hold on to his bird rights, and now that new team has his bird rights and can say, here's your fifth year, because we have your rights to do that. So there is a little incentive.
I guess my question is, he's how much is he making this year? That's where the haul would be kind of weird, right? Because I guess unless you're saying they get a treasure trove of picks and future picks, he's just not making a lot of money right now.
He's
right?
making $6.5 million this year. So right. That's the problem. And if you sign and trade him on top of the hard cap, you fall into that rule. Jesus, escaping my head, but it's a base year compensation. That's what it is. So in a trade, so say you sign him to the max and it's $30 million, but because he's a base year compensation guy, the outgoing trade value is half that.
Oh, yeah.
So you send out, he gets, but for the receiving team, it's the $30 million. Like, that's the weird part about bait. So you can't just sign and trade Jaylen Brown and say, well, we'll give him the $30 million. And you sign him to whatever, and he goes to another team. And it still makes the matching salaries very, very difficult, because for the Celtics, it would only be $15 million for the calculations. But for the receiving team, it would be $30 million. And it becomes a bear. They can figure it out because they're smart, but... Yeah.
Also, I think, don't they have until Monday to sign that deal? And if not, he can't get a new contract until next year. So even if they trade for midseason, they can't just give him a contract, right?
No, right. So if he doesn't sign an extension by Monday, then he just plays the year on his $6.5 million. And
there you go.
If a team trades for him midseason, then they have his bird rights. He becomes a restricted free agent for the team.
We're talking about a sign-and-trade situation. Gotcha.
Yeah. So if they trade him to Atlanta, then Atlanta, he becomes a restricted free agent for Atlanta. They can give him a five-year contract at whatever, and they have the negotiation, and they have the right of first refusal and all of that. So,
right.
That's my question. Does Danny Ainge believe that Jaylen Brown can be one of the big three? And if he does not, but another team feels like Jaylen Brown's had a hell of a year and they want to max him out and sign him away, then I can see Danny Ainge trying to figure something out. You know, any team out there that has a big that is on the market, I can see Danny Ainge targeting, trying to fix the front court situation. So we'll see. Indiana, Orlando.
Whatever.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But okay. I'll tell you what. The odds that I thought that Jaylen Brown were gone are closer. Like, it's closer to 50-50 than it was at the beginning of the preseason. So
how do you feel about Dwayne Dedman? No, I know. We need more than that, but yeah.
Like, I like Dwayne Dedman, but
I do. I was all summer. I was hoping that he signed with the Celtics would somehow sign him, but yeah.
No, I mean, I thought that Sacramento did nicely to get him. $13 million, per year is more than I would have thought, but it's today's NBA. Like I still get stuck in the old mindset. Like $13 million is a lot of money, but in today's NBA, where the salary cap is like $109 million, I got to remember, like, the $13 million isn't what $13 million used to be. But I still think you need more from a better return. Like I would consider, like, even like DeMontis Sabonis from Indy. Like, can we get Miles Turner? Can we get Miles Turner out of you? But I don't know. That is going to be an ongoing story, so we'll continue that conversation another time. I just want to quickly get to this statistical thing that
Why you might want Miles Turner? It's because Miles Turner is a modern big. He likes to shoot threes, and he likes to dunk.
I would love Miles Turner. If the Celtics, like, give me Jaylen Brown for Miles Turner, sign me up right now.
He would fit the new shot profile. He would like to shoot threes, and he likes to dunk.
Exactly. See, now that's a nice segue. That's exactly. I like that. So that goes into what I look. First of all, Miles Turner starting on this team at center. I'm in. I am so in on that. Like, that changes the entire outlook of this Celtics team because of his ability to block shots. And he doesn't need to be a primary scorer, but he'd still be enough of a scorer that he could really help out. Like, yes. And he would shoot threes as opposed to mid-range. And he's not bad from three either. I was kind of poking around because it was an off day, and I'm just nothing really to pull from that last preseason game. I was kind of poking around with the statistics, and I thought it was interesting that the Celtics have kind of changed their shot profile. That last regular season, 18.5% of their offense was mid-range shots. And this preseason, only 8.5% of their shots came from the mid-range. So they've cut 10% of the mid-range shots out of their diet. And 41% almost of their shots are from the restricted area. And 40.5% of their shots come from three. So now all of a sudden, you've got almost 82% of their shots coming from the three-point line or the restricted area, which is like exactly where you want to be. And the other 20% kind of, paint, non-restricted, which is okay. But that, like, 8.5% of mid-range, that's a great place for this Celtics offense to be. That's Jason Tatum taking better shots. That's Gordon Hayward taking better shots. That's just, I think, Horford and Kyrie are both very mid-range heavy players. Them leaving kind of changes the shot profile a little bit, which, I mean, I'd rather have those guys than not, but, at least now you're looking at the Celtics team, and I think it's just a sign, even though it's a small sample size, James, that they understand what they need to do to be good offensively. And as the sample size grows, and I'm comparing last regular season is like 7,400 shots to a preseason with 345 shots, the numbers are going to kind of loosen up a little bit. But
absolutely,
I like that this team is understanding of where the most efficient offense is going to come from. And when you look at the talent that these guys, that this team has, and if they're going to be playing this efficiently, then you start to look at the potential for some really big point totals, and maybe that minimizes some of the defensive deficiencies that they have.
Yeah, and I read a couple articles about Jason Tatum saying it, and you yourself, you know, you touched on it when you wrote about it, that like you said, they're finally listening, they're tuning in, and they realize that you know, that's the way to play the game. If you want to be an elite scorer, you got to score at the rim, score from the three, and get to the free throw line. And that was a big issue last year. You know, I watched a lot of the games, and if they really all buy in and they realize that, but they had stretches last year where they actually, you know, a lot of paint touches, a lot of driving kick, and it seemed like it was working. So it's all about, can they maintain those new habits, right? That's the biggest question. And you, like, you know, it's amazing. Like, if you think about it, 18%, that's almost one in every five shots, you know, 20, mm-hmm. It's almost 20%. And then now they're at 8%, which is like less than one in every 10. So that's incredible. That's like a huge shift. And it kind of shows, though. I think we saw last year, a lot of times they'd run out to a little lead, and then the Celtics would let other teams kind of back in the game because they're shooting all these bad shots. They take bad shots. And this preseason, tiny sample size, I get it. They're just blowing teams off the court. And, you know, even the second unit, they don't play any starters, and somehow they're beating teams by 20 and 30 because they're playing a more upbeat, faster pace. You know, they're moving off the ball, and it matters. It really does matter. So, and it's infectious too, right? You see the guys, the new guys. Guys who've been there, they're all picking up on it, and they're all playing the same style. So it's a very encouraging sign.
Yeah, I think that the one thing is you hear these guys talk about building good habits, and that's a big buzz phrase for Brad Stevens and for everybody. They talk about building good habits and kind of just executing this type of game plan. The understanding, especially from like a guy like Jason Tatum, of where the most efficient shots are coming from is important. It's also important to understand that there is a place for mid-range basketball. Like I know there's a big thing, and I know that on Twitter, like Matt Moore and Kevin Durant kind of got into it and went back and forth. There are a few guys that, like Durant, that shoot 50%+ from mid-range. Like, when you get to shoot 50% or better from the mid-range, the rules don't apply to you because that's the magic number. Like, if you're shooting 50% from mid-range, then you're basically shooting league average from three. That you go take those shots. But when you're Jason Tatum and you're shooting 36% from mid-range, like, no, you got to fix this, dude. Like, you can't. I know you like to take those shots, and I know you say you're still going to take those shots, but like, unless you're stepping into an in rhythm, all of a sudden the defense has all packed the paint and it's just right there for you to take essentially a free throw, then fine. But if it's early in the shot clock, like 20 seconds to go, and the defense sags off and you have an open mid-range shot, how about, you know what, take an extra dribble, try to draw some defenders and kick it out and work the ball around. And I think that's where this is going to change things. Maybe not even, oh, as we've been saying, look at Jason Tatum driving when he would have normally taken a jumper. It's as much about driving and kicking and putting the defense, trying to get that defense into rotation to allow the next guy to drive, or to allow two swings and a three from somebody else. Like, that's just as important as changing your own personal shot profile.
And it's really nice to see that Jason Tatum seems to have got it. And so it's on a macro level, it totally makes sense. But then we see teams like the Rockets that are so dedicated to it that they'll miss 27 straight threes and lose a series that they should have won. So there's a basketball is a certain holistic, like it's not a math equation, right? And I get that you want your shot profile to look like, and I mean, obviously it's great that the Celtics are realizing, hey, I shouldn't pull up from 17 with a guy in my face with 50 seconds on the shot clock. Like, that's just good basketball, smart. But like, yeah, Kevin Durant had a whole long exchange, and like his point was like, it's basketball. You can't just say don't take mid-range shots. And that's my issue with it when there's somebody analytically driven early this summer, just they tweeted out basically, they said, if you're taking any player taking a mid-range shot is taking a bad, it's a stupid shot. And right. It's not that black and white. It's not. There are times when there's a good mid-range shot, there's good mid-range shooters, and there's obviously bad shots. So the goal is to cut down the bad shots, make it situational, and keep it a rare thing, right? You can't build an offense around a mid-range. You just can't. Like you said, it's impossible because not enough people shoot a high enough percentage from there. But at the same time, basketball players can't – sure, it's about building habits, and you can't think like that. So you can't think, but you have to build that habit. And hopefully the team is doing that right now, and we'll see, you know, by December and January if it holds up. So yeah, it's intriguing, and I love the piece that you wrote about it, because you nailed it. You can't just say let's eliminate it. It's not realistic.
No.
But you also, you know, Kevin Durant has to understand this is why they say great players sometimes don't make great coaches, right? Because totally. In their minds, they're like, well, just do this amazing thing that no one else can really do. Right. I do it, you know. And so that's what it sounded like with him. He's like, what do you mean? You know, it's part of, and then they're like, yeah, Kevin Durant, you can shoot 55% from mid range. That's why you can shoot him. It's not about you.
Right. Everything he said made sense for him, but right. It doesn't make sense for everybody. I'm just gonna, whenever this argument comes up, I always go to the Milwaukee series this past season with the Celtics, that Milwaukee's defense was geared towards giving up the mid-range shot. And the Celtics took it. The Celtics took that bait like a fish, man. They just sucked that thing up, and it didn't work. Like, if a defense is designed to give up the mid-range shot, which most defenses are, you live with that mid-range shot. If you're just going to sit there and be like, well, this is an open shot, I'm just going to take it.
I'm going to take what the defense gives me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you say that. Like, well, the defense gave us mid-range shots, so we took the mid-range shots. Okay, yes, I get that. But, again, early in the shot clock, maybe you don't take it because it's going to be there at 20. It's going to be that 15, 10, 5 in the shot clock. It's just going to be there. So why not take 10 seconds to just penetrate? Go take one more dribble and see what you get. Because I tell you what, you're talking about shooting 50% on twos. Can't you shoot 50% on contested layup attempts? Like, I'd rather see a contested layup attempt that may draw a foul, get you to the line,
yeah,
than a mid-range jumper, which, okay, if you can hit that at 50%, fine. But not everybody can hit that at 50%. Drive. And even if you're not driving to score, drive it to draw the defense in. Like I said, kick, swing, swing, swing. Then that defense, eventually, somebody's going to slip up. So there's going to be a lane that opens up. And you know what the worst case scenario is? You get the exact same shot that you got 10, 15 seconds ago. Then, all right, fine. You tried to break that shell. You didn't. So now you can take that mid-range shot. But if it's the first shot that you attempt, one pass, step into a mid-range shot, I don't like that. So that's the difference. That's the nuance. So some mid-range shots, sure. And I think not all mid-range shots are created equal too, because mid-range includes like some of these long twos that...
A step inside a three-point line, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Those are especially terrible shots, and I think those count as mid-range shots. So a guy up fake... Guy flies by you and you step into a shot that's a foot inside the 3-point line. That's a shitty shot. Up faking a guy, taking three dribbles and defense sags off of you, and you're an NBA player that steps into an in rhythm shot at the free throw line. Well, that's different. That's okay. Like that can be okay in a lot more situations than the other thing can be. So, but.
I will say it's fascinating watching young players come to grips. Like Zach LaVine had a quote where he thinks it's crazy that coaches are telling them, like, you know, stop shooting these mid-range shots, because, you know, they grew up on Kobe. They grew up on right. Paul Pierce. They grew up on Melo. Like, this is part of the game. If you're a volume scorer, you operate in the mid-range. Sure, you take threes and you get to the rim, but you operate in the mid-range. And it's fascinating watching the forced evolution of the NBA and of great scorers. You know, great young scorers having to, you know, since there were eight until there were 17, that was their game. And now they're being told, no, it's going to be more fascinating watching the next level of scorers come in. The next, you know, the guys who are in high school now, they're already learning this. You know, they're already learning. I need to shoot threes. I need to get to the rim. The mid-range, yeah. So it'll be fascinating to watch the next level of scorers come in to see if they're already ready for the NBA. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think it's, you know, I can understand the admiration for a player and trying to copy him. But at the same time, you got to be good at it. So if you're not good at it, don't do it. And so Zach LaVine's like, yeah, operate in the mid-range. Well, you suck at the mid-range shot, Zach LaVine. So you shoot better from three than you do from the mid-range. Just like Jason Tatum last year, shot 36% from the mid-range, 37% from three. So why aren't you taking more threes? You hit those at a higher rate, and they're worth more points. So do that. It seems to make sense when you tell people that in that range, but yeah, they don't all get it. All
and
right,
then,
man.
You know what? We see Carson Edwards and we see Garland, and they are like Garland has. If you squint, you see a little Dame Lillard to his game. He's pulling, you know, quick deep threes. He's NBA ready. So like it's crazy how Steph Curry and Dame have already started influencing the next wave of NBA players as they hit the league. So
totally, these guys are taking 30 footers. And making them. That's the crazy thing.
You know, I love it.
I saw the thing. I was watching some of the Atlanta Hawks Knicks preseason game, and Trae Young hit more 30 footers than Steph did last year, which, I mean, 30 foot, that's a long way. That's a third of the court. That's, I mean, oh, God. But
before we go, I'm going to ask you, do you think that we're eventually going to have to move the 3-point line back? Do you think it's going to happen?
Something's going to have to happen. I think something's going to have to happen. Whether I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a 4-point line. Like if they do like some sort of 33-foot 4-point line where it's, you know, and I don't know what that's going to be. Like that's going to be weird. But you can't move the 3-point line back without changing the dimensions of the court at this point.
From what I hear, they're going to move it back and they're going to eliminate the corner three. So everything will be above the break.
Well, that would be interesting. That would be interesting. So they move it back and they just.
Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, it is what it is. If guys can shoot better and shoot more, it is what it is. I don't like the thought of it, but yeah, I'm kind of a traditionalist about stuff. So I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the counterpoint is, you know, like I will also say that I'm a traditionalist, but you can keep going back to traditional until you get back to like the peach baskets. And, you know, like at some point, like rules have changed a lot in the NBA. So each rule change isn't like some affront to the league. Like the 3-point line came in, what, like 1977, 78, like something like that. Like, yeah. So, I mean, that hasn't been around for like forever. I can imagine like, Jerry West would have decimated the league with his shooting if he had a 3-point line. So who knows? Who knows? I don't like the idea of eliminating the corner three, but I also like the idea of widening the court. But that's another.
I'm with it. Yeah, add more spacing, make it more fun.
Yeah. I think that would be interesting, but we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if they change things though. That's the show. Thanks, James Holis. Follow him on Twitter at Snotty Drippin. Buy him some candy corn. Give him yours. Give him my. It's gross, but whatever. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Reds Army _ John. If you haven't followed me at all, if you're new to the show, appreciate you coming on and checking us out. Subscribe to the show. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us a good written review. Again, we're the number one Celtics podcast on iTunes and the 20th overall basketball podcast, which is that's pretty good for just being team specific. So thanks for everybody for subscribing and for sharing the podcast and telling everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Locked On Celtics.